Welcome, everybody, to our Monday Night Tehillim series, where we like to choose some of the Tehillim to go through, to go and see how we can do our part, again, to see whatever it is that we can do to help, obviously, the terrible matzav that's going on in Eretz Yisrael. We all know that this was a pretty wild weekend. What was just shown to me and what I think people saw online, a beautiful article that the most viewed, the most searched item in Israel during this attack from Iran was Psalms, right? What exactly do the Jewish people look to do during this time? This is where we look. We look up. I know I was talking to my sister and some of the grandchildren of the people in this room and hearing how they had to sleep in a bomb shelter. But what really got me upset was hearing that my 8-year-old niece asked my sister, "Mommy, is this Hamas or is this someone else?" And like getting to have that question, that was upsetting. And just to realize there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on. And we all know this, and there's obviously a bit of a different feel. There's a bit of a different feel right now, and it's something which we're obviously thinking about and grappling with. So it's important that we get to interact with the Tehillim, and we get to try to understand what we're saying. And tonight we're going to do Tehillim Kuf Chaf, because that's what we're doing in Shul this week. And it's a fascinating concept to talk about Kuf Chaf, because when I chose this one, as I've told you before, a lot of the times when I'm choosing, Rabbi Trump asks, like, oh, which Tehillim do you want to do this week? And I sometimes, I will admit, look for ones which are a little shorter, because I don't want to make Michael suffer through them when he's doing it at 8 o'clock minyan. So I try to choose some shorter ones. But here, I'm like, you know what? The beginning of the Shir HaMaalos, this is a good place to go and start. So if you look at Tehillim Kuf Chaf, this is the beginning of the 15 section of the different Shir HaMaalos, Shir HaMaalos, however you want to pluralize that word. So the beginning of the Shir HaMaalos is, let's just say, and there are 15 of them. So some explain the reason why there are 15 is because that corresponds to each of the steps going from the Ezras Nashim up into the Beis HaMikdash. When I was in Israel just a few weeks ago, I went to that the virtual reality tour. Anyone has not done that, do it. It's awesome. And I was counting the steps while looking there. It was such an amazing thing. And you feel it now more than ever because it's just on our minds. So we have the 15, and there's a concept, Shir HaMaalos, that each one is the song of ascent, because even within the notes themselves, within the tones themselves and the tunes that the Levim would sing, it would get higher and higher and higher as we continue to move forward. And they were all about elevating ourselves. And as we read through these Shir HaMaalos, we're supposed to continue to elevate ourselves. But this one is particularly meaningful right now, and we'll go and understand why. So says the Perek of Tehillim, Shir HaMaalos El Hashem, Batsarasa li karasi vayaneni. A song of ascent. So again, Shir HaMaalos. In my distress, I called to the Lord. I called to Hashem and he answered me. This is where we see David HaMelech a lot. Another thing I got to do that everyone should try to do. We went to Ir David. And you get to see where David HaMelech's palace was. And you get to see, imagine him looking over the beautiful mountaintops, which you see him writing about. And you can imagine as things are happening in his life, he's writing over these Prakim of Tehillim. It's unbelievable to see. You can imagine as he's sitting there, oh my gosh, what's going to be? How are we going to survive? How are we going to move forward? Just writing and crying out to Hashem. So again, coming from this place of distress. Some say that this is more of a messianic cry. But we know, as we've seen from many of these other Tehillim, David has a way of writing, even if it's a specific moment in his life, somehow it really applies to us for all times. David HaMelech is so good like that. So it seems to be going from a place of distress, as the Pasuk says, that I called out, but Sarasali, Karasi Vayaneni, and Hashem answered me. Now, what is this extra distress that's happening in this parak? And this is why it's so appropriate for this war, and not really every war that the Jews have had over time, but I guess we just see it more clearly now because of social media. Hashem Hatsila Nafshi Misfas Sheker Miloshun Remia. Hashem, save my soul from false lips, from a deceitful tongue. Fascinating that what's David HaMelech crying out for? There is so much propaganda out there. There's so much going on. They're trying to make me look despicable. They're making us look despicable. It's not just about the physical battle. It's about the libels and the slanders. It's about all of the terrible things they're saying about us. People come away from this last Motzei Shabbos and it's, oh yeah, Israel and Iran, both two sides of the equation. That's what comes out of this. Because you look what the media can go and change and what they can portray. You look at these algorithms in TikTok. Rabbi Trump was mentioning the other week, TikTok is so powerful that if China invaded Taiwan, they can have people protesting throughout the country in America pro-China against Taiwan within 15 minutes. That's how powerful their algorithms are. It's unbelievable. You look at this media battle, and obviously we have billions against a few million. It's not a winning formula, but we know that obviously we're very lucky that we have a lot more going for us. But it's crazy that this media battle, we've spoken about this idea in the past, the Igeres Teiman of the Rambam. The Rambam was written a letter from the Yemenite Jews in the year 1172. And the Rambam was written to because the Jews were just in a terrible place. They had nowhere to go. There was a false person going around mixing up all the religions. And the Rambam says, well, it says in the letter what they wrote to the Rambam, not only are they terrorizing us, but they're also making us look despicable. They're spreading all these rumors about us. They're spreading all of these terrible things about us. What are we going to do? And the Rambam writes back, you have to attach yourself to Zaman Matan Torah Seinu. But we see this is not a new problem. This has always been going on, even before social media. It's the rumors, it's the lies, it's all the libels, it's terrible. But then it kind of shifts a little bit. Ma yitain lach, ma yitain lacha, ma yosef lach, lashon remia. Now David kind of shifts to the enemies themselves. What can he give you? What can he add to you? You just stop lying. Why are you guys lying so much? What are you gaining from this? In Pasuk Beis, he's going and crying out to Hashem, help me with all of these lies. In Pasuk Gimel, he's going, enemies, what are you doing? It's not even helping you. Well, it is, but it's not even helping you. Stop lying. And we know when it comes to the words, sticks and stones won't break my bones, but words can never, will break my bones, but words can never, it can. It starts out as words until words tell you that Israel bombed a hospital and killed 500 people, and then a shul gets lit on fire in a different area in the country, in the world. And you have all these false reports. Somehow everyone's so quick to judgment when it comes to anything Israel has done, but the other way, oh, we'll see. Alleged. We see this. This is mamish what's happening day in, day out. And it's unbelievable. You have real government officials quoting the Gazan Health Ministry's number of deaths. It's crazy. It's a wild thing. But we continue to push forward. And this is what this parak of Tehillim is talking about. Chitzei gibor shenunim im gachale resamim. Sharpened arrows of mighty man with coals of brooms. Here, what he's saying again is that these arrows, you're not actually physical arrows, but speech can hurt. How appropriate. Right between Parshas Tazria and Mitzora. Speech can actually hurt. This is something which we actually discussed a little bit over Shabbos. This concept, it's a beautiful idea. When it comes to the karbanos that you have to bring to go and purify yourselves, I said this over by you guys, that you have to go and say you have these two animals, these two birds, that you go and bring as the karbanos to go and purify yourself from being a mitzvah, and it's two birds. And that's not so strange that we have two birds. We have this in other places. We have achas le'olah, achas le'chatas. We have different ways of going and having different karbanos. But what's very strange about these karbanos in particular is one bird you kill and one bird flies free. And what's also very strange is Rashi tells us, why do we use birds? Because birds tweet a lot. And they make a lot of noise. Right now we have to figure out a drusha for X. But Alana actually came up. My wife came up with a go. And she's like, you can't say Lashnar. Right? Twitter can't. Now it's X. All right. I don't know if that's a job. But Twitter made a lot of sense. Right? Twitter made a lot of sense. Birds constantly chirp. And it goes all over the world in just a matter of seconds. But if it's all bad, then we want to destroy both birds. Why are we destroying just one of them and letting the other one fly free? So the idea goes based on a story with the Chavetz Chaim. After the Chavetz Chaim wrote his book about Shmiras HaLashon, someone was living at that time, read this book, and said, there's just no way this guy ever talks. It's impossible to talk. It can't be. If he's going to go and follow all these rules, it must be that he just sits there and doesn't say a word. And they went to the Chavetz Chaim for Shabbos, and they found, oh, wow, he's actually a very talkative person. He's someone who's very pleasant to be around, very fun, very friendly. And they realized there's a way to talk just in the positive. There's a way to talk just building people up, saying nice things. There's a way to do it. It exists. It's something which we can strive for. And this is what the message of the two birds is. Yes, we get rid of all the bad speech. We get rid of all the Lashon Hara. We go and sheft one bird, but that other bird, we let it go free. Because our goal is not to suppress speech. Our goal is to channel the speech into positive speech. Talking during davening, for example. We always have these campaigns. Don't talk during davening. That's not necessarily the right campaign. We should talk. It's just, who are we talking to? Shouldn't be silent in davening. It shouldn't be silent in shul. We should be davening in davening. We should be talking to Hashem. We should say things out loud. The Gemara's talk about this. Bruria, the wife of Rabbi Meir, walked into the base medrash and was yelling at people who weren't learning out loud. It helps you remember. It helps you clarify things in your head. Do you know when people go and chant, when they go to a game, let's go Mets, they need all the chants they can get, right? When we have the Mets, when you go to a Mecca and you're chanting, so the studies actually show that when you start chanting for them, you actually believe they have a better chance of winning. Does anything change? No. But once you say things, you'd start to have them going. This is what happened in the times of Rus. We have Boaz recognizing that the Jews were in a terrible state spiritually, where God was nowhere to be found on anyone's tongue. So all of a sudden, Boaz instituted, when you greet people, you greet them with Hashem's name. And all of a sudden, people start talking about Hashem more. The more you talk about things, the more they go in. We can tell ourselves we'll do certain things, even if we fail every single day. I set my alarm every morning for a certain time, and I never get up the first time. Don't ask my wife about it. Not great, but you try. And the more you talk about things, the more it goes in. That's how it works. And we have to be able to continuously push. Words actually do matter. Especially Parshas Tazria Mitzora, this is these arrows that we're referring to over here. Pasuk Hey. Oya li ki garti meshech, shachanti imahale kedar. Woe is to me, for I have sojourned in Meshech. I dwelt amongst the tents in Kedar. So this is just David's way of showing that this is not the first time that this has happened. It's happened a lot of times throughout history, and it has continued to happen every time since. Pasuk Vav, Rabba Shachna la nafshi im sonei shalom. For a long time, my soul dwelt with those who hate peace. Part of the tragedy, says David HaMelech, is that what? Part of the tragedy is that we want peace and we're forced into war with those who want nothing to do with peace. So we don't even necessarily want to be in this war, but we are with people who do not want peace in any way, shape, or form. Now, this is strange. This is a tough one. I was thinking about this in terms of our war currently. October 6th wasn't all that great either. Right? October 7th, and obviously it's been shifted. It's a different type of battle. It's a different type of war. But we're not looking for wars necessarily with our enemies. This hit home. I was with some of these families from Be'eri and Kfar Aza, and hearing that they were very close with a lot of these friends in Gaza. They were very close. They would go to their supermarkets. One of them had someone living in their home for quite some time. And that's how Hamas had such amazing intel, because they knew who every single person was. When we were in Be'eri, every single nurse's house got burnt. Not every house got burnt. A lot of them did. Every single nurse in the local hospital had their house burnt. That was not an accident. They knew what they were doing. This woman we were with, Sharabi was her last name, right? She's the one who lost her husband, and her daughter's boyfriend was also taken, and then he was released after 54 days. She was saying that they had her and 10 friends, and they said, no, you guys stay here. We don't want you. And they're like, what? And she's like, yeah, you guys just stay here. They didn't kill them, and they just left them. They still have no idea why, but they knew what they were doing. And you look, we're with people who don't want peace at all. This is their goal. No matter what happens, just the constant fight and the constant battle, that is their goal, and that's what makes this even harder. And just to end, he says in Pasuk Zayin, Ani shalom v'chiyav daber heima lamilchama. I am at peace, but when I speak, they come to wage war. Even in war, we are at peace. A lot of this comes back to the fact of stuff we always talk about, which is when we recognize where everything comes from, of course we do our ishtadlus, but we're able to take a deep breath and recognize that it's all coming from above. This goes back to what Rav Soloveitchik talks about. Rav Soloveitchik, when he was talking to a psychiatrist about yamim noraim, uvachein tein pachticha, and they said, Rabbi, it's not a good midah. It causes a lot of anxiety to have fear. Why are we always talking about fearing God and fearing God and fearing God? It's too much. It's going to cause a lot of anxiety. And Rav Soloveitchik said back, no, you have it all wrong. When you can fear God and truthfully believe and honestly believe that God is in charge, it gets rid of all other fears. Because you recognize that ultimately, if it's supposed to happen, it's going to happen. If not, not. Of course, we have to put in our hishtadlus. We have to do our best to put up our best fight. But we know that ultimately Hashem is running the show. But it also, I think, touches on another idea. We know that Aaron HaKohen is known as the Ohev Shalom Virodev Shalom. So what does this mean? We always think that this means that Aaron HaKohen is always chasing after peace. No matter what he was doing, he was always chasing after peace in every way. But some explain a little bit differently. Ohev Shalom, that Aaron HaKohen loved peace. And in order to love peace, sometimes that expressed itself by being Rodev Shalom. What does this mean? There are some times that there are actions that objectively don't look like peaceful actions. But when you put it in the proper context, I know that's a bad word, but when you put it in the proper context, then it is a peaceful action. Trying to get rid of Hamas, is that a peaceful action? So you're bombing, right? How could that be? But we know what it is. That is a peaceful action. In order to achieve peace sometimes, you have to do certain things that stray from what conventional peace seems to be. Which is a fascinating point. Ohev Shalom v'rodev Shalom, that Aaron HaKohen would be tough when he needed to be tough. And he'd be loving when he needed to be loving. You have to know what the situation calls for. You have to be strong when you have to be strong. You can't always be a pushover. You have to know exactly what's going on. You have to know the repercussions, and you have to know what's coming. So there's a lot there, and that's this chapter of Tehillim. And I think this idea of us being slandered is obviously not something new, something we just saw in a real way just very recently when we were reading the Megillah. The Pasuk says, Vayomer Haman lamelech Achashverosh. When Haman is convincing Achashverosh to go and destroy the Jewish people because one guy wouldn't bow down. And it'd be embarrassing if he came and said, oh, this guy wouldn't bow down to me. You got to go and kill him. That'd be embarrassing. So he has to come up with a better plot. He has to come up with a better story. So he says, Yeshno am echad mefuzar mefurad bein ha'amim. There's a certain nation. There's one nation that's scattered all over the place. Now we know the mussar we're supposed to take from that is because they were not united. That's why they were subject to this type of destruction. But what the Medrash tells us is that Haman was taking a lamdisha argument to Achashverosh. Haman said, you got to destroy this people. And Achashverosh said, that looked terrible. Like, you don't want to have the bald spot in the nation. It's not good. So he said, no. Am echad mefuzar mefurad. No, they're spread out. You won't even notice that they're gone. And then it says, b'chomi nos ma'achusecha. They're all in their own things. V'dasei hem shonos. They're doing things differently. You know, they don't pay their taxes on time. They're not this. They have all these different ideas. They're not really doing this stuff. Mikol am. V'astasei ha'melech ein ha'mosim. And they don't go and follow the king's decrees. V'ha'melech ein shov la'hanicham. And they don't do any of these things that they're supposed to do. Medrash tells us that Haman went over to Achashverosh and said, do you understand that if they have a cup of wine and a bug goes into that cup of wine, what do? They remove the bug. But do you know that if you touch the cup of wine, you know what they're going to do? Spill out the entire cup of wine. Look how much disrespect they have toward you. Haman knew stuff. Haman knew what he was talking about. And you look at the slander and ultimately that causes the destruction or the hopeful destruction of the Jewish people. It's not new. This has always been around. But I think it goes even farther than that to something which we're going to interact with in this upcoming week. When we're at the Seder and we talk about Arami Oved Avi and we go through the different elements of the story. We say, Vayareu Osanu Lanu HaMitzrim, that the Mitzrim were terrible to us, we say in Parshas Kisavo. It's very strange, some of the Mefarshim point out, that we say Osanu instead of Lanu. Vayareu Osanu HaMitzrim, that the Mitzrim were terrible to us. If we wanted to say that the Mitzrim were terrible, Lanu. What's Osanu? So the Mefarshim pick up on three interesting points that come up from this word Osanu, which seem to give all very important practical lessons in terms of how Jew hatred seems to come about. Number one, some Mefarshim explain that Osanu highlights the fact that it was a gradual process to get the Jews to become the slaves that they became. It started out by, you know, oh, can you do this thing here? Can you do that thing here? Oh, you know what? We're going to make you do that. It started with small laws, and people started to think, okay, we're not going to say anything. This isn't that big a deal. We could suck this up. And then eventually it started to become more and more and more until it was persecution and slavery that was unbearable. The most, I guess, relevant example we can think of is the Nuremberg Laws, right? It starts out as just some laws. Okay, we're not going to cause a big fuss about this because, all right, it's not that big a deal. We can survive this. But when it starts small, and then gradually it becomes bigger and bigger, and it becomes a bigger issue until it's beyond control. It's too late. It's beyond repair. So this is the idea of Osanu, that it started like this and then totally shifted into being something else. Another approach is based on a fascinating Medrash. The Medrash tells us that Paro was sitting there thinking, you know, how can I get rid of these Jews? I'm looking back at history, and I see that no one's really been able to do so. I'm looking back at Esav. And I see that Esav wanted to destroy the Jewish people, and he wasn't able to. I need to pick up on it from where Esav came from. Now, it's very strange because we know Esav might have had a taina. He's wrong, but he might have had a taina. Look, Yaakov stole all my brachos. Yaakov stole everything from me. That's why Haman, who's a descendant of Esav, he tries to go and pick up from where Esav left off and destroy all the Jews. And he actually learns from Paro. Paro's a link in that change. Paro, he sees, gets rid of all of the males. So Haman learns from that. He says, I got to get rid of everybody. Because clearly what Paro did didn't work. So I got to just get rid of everybody. But it's very strange that Paro is even in this conversation. You have Esav. Fine, I can get that. Haman wants to avenge his great-great-grandfather Esav. What does Paro have to do with this? So you would think by reading the Psukim, it just looks like Paro is capitalizing on an interesting situation. He's got a chance to have a great economy based on the Jews' labor. So you would think this is just an innocent way, not necessarily selection of the Jews, but it's just a way to go get some free labor. And he can go and build a great economy for his country and everything can be good. But what the Medrash is teaching us is that fester deep down sometimes, halacha Esav sonei es Yaakov, there's those feelings towards the Am HaNivchar, towards the Jewish people from our enemies that's just there and it's just so deep rooted and it's very difficult to get rid of it. You're not going to be able to argue with people and convince them otherwise. Sometimes it's just so deep-rooted. Vayareyu osanu, that he hated us in such a way. It wasn't just what he was doing to us. It's that he hated us in such a way that he wanted to go and involve himself into that conversation as if he's going and avenging that which Esav wasn't able to do. They go and they put themselves into these conversations sometimes. They feel, people feel challenged just based on our existence. That's what Hitler would say in Mein Kampf. He writes about how I can't live in a world where the Jew exists. And a lot of it comes back down to the same yesod, which is when you have really powerful people who want to claim that they're a God, that they're everything, and you have the Jews that are sitting there knowing what's real and what's not. When we know, it's a big threat to those who want you to believe otherwise. And that's something which is very difficult. But then there's answer number three, which I think ties back into our mizmor, ties back into our parak of Tehillim. Answer number three is when the pasuk says this, we have to understand the other context in which it's coming in. Hava nischak malo. When it talks about the fact that Paro decided to enslave the Jewish people, so Paro says, you know what? These people are reproducing at a wild rate. They're going to rebel, and they're ultimately going to kill us, so we have to go self-defense. We have to go and preempt this. We have to go and fight against the Jews in order to save ourselves. What does this mean? Then vayareyu osanu lanu ha-mitzrim vayanunu. Then the mitzrim went and made our lives miserable. What does one thing have to do with the other? So what they explain, the Mefarshim explain, is that in order to go and decimate a people, you have to have a propaganda machine. And that's what the mitzrim had. The Jews were good citizens. They wanted to just be part of Egyptian culture. They were paying the taxes. Yosef saved their entire economy. But once Paro decided that he wanted to destroy the Jews, the propaganda machine had to go into full effect, and you had to create a narrative that the Jews are subhuman, that they're a threat, and that's how you're going to go and kill them. And it just seems to come up every single generation. These are not new stories. This is something which constantly comes up. And this is what we see with anti-Semitism, which is so interesting. And this is why so many people have such a difficult time with it. It's because the definition does change. Initially, it was that Jews were religious, and we hate anyone who's religious, so they would kill the Jews. Then, when religion became cool, then it was all the libels that the Jews killed Jesus, and the Jews this, and the Jews that. And then that was the problem. Then it was that they're too involved in government, they're too rich, they're too powerful. Then it was that they're too weak. Social Darwinism, like Hitler says, we can't live in a world. There are some people, you have to bloodlet, you have to get rid of the blood sometimes. You got to get rid of the Jews. And it shifts, and now it turned into, oh, we're oppressing, we're colonizing, we're genociding. It always shifts. No matter what's happening, it's always shifting from every single generation. And this is actually what ties into, not here, but the Aseres HaDibros. There's an amazing idea. I think I mentioned in the Daf Shir one time. There's in the Aseres HaDibros, so you find Hashem has unlimited resources. So Hashem could have written the Aseres HaDibros on one big stone. It didn't have to be on two separate tablets. Why is it in two separate tablets? So yeah, maybe it looks nicer in shuls, right? Like the design on top of the Vagad of Aharon Kodeshes wouldn't look as nice if it was just one long thing. So you want to have two separate. Why is it in two separate ones? So we know that there's some connection between the way that they match up, between 1 and 6, 2 and 7, 3 and 8, 4 and 9, 5 and 10. If you look at 1 and 6, what's 1 and 6? So we have Anochi Hashem Elokecha, then I am Hashem your God, and what's 6? Lo sirtzach, don't kill. So Rabbi Jacobson pointed out something amazing. He said that if you look at the Aseres HaDibros and you look at the way those go, so the Jews have been subject to punishment and to, I guess, destruction on both ends of the coin. Meaning, as Jews, we have the Aseres HaDibros and we believe that they're all godly mandated. They're all mandated from Hashem. So you read, Anochi Hashem Elokecha lo tzirtzach. I am Hashem your God and therefore don't kill. Says Rabbi Jacobson, the Jews have been punished by people who have separated that at different points in different times in history. What do I mean? So if you think, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, so I am Hashem your God, don't kill. So some people will say, I don't need a God to tell me not to kill. That's obvious. I know there's social norms, there's common sense, there are things you do and that you don't do. I don't need a God to tell me that you're not allowed to kill. Now that falls by the wayside when you have what the Nazis thought. Because then if there's no God and it's all about don't kill, if you can find a way to justify the killing, i.e. the Jews are mice, they're not worthy of life, then you justify it because it's nothing to do. My moral compass is that the Jews don't deserve life, so you can go and kill them. And that's the gas chambers. Hitler could wake up, all the Nazis could wake up, they can kill all these Jews all day and then go out for a steak dinner at night because they're not killing humans. It doesn't mean anything to them. So they separated 1 and 6. 6 is the only thing that matters, but that falls away when you have a distortion of what's really moral and what's not. And then on the other side, you have Hamas, and you have Allahu Akbar, where you have people that are all about God. If you don't believe in the same things that I do, Lo Sirtzach's not a thing. So they just have God with no Lo Sirtzach. And the Jews have been punished on that end too. The Jews have been killed by those types of terrorists also. Only the Jews can keep it together. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Lo Sirtzach. There's an objective standard of what's considered moral and what's not. And that's because we have Hashem. We have a way to go and look at it, to go and make this relevant. But we see this slander, this libel has always existed. It's going to exist. We're going to do our part to do whatever we can to be educated enough to talk back, to understand what's happening, to be able to respond. But we also know, ultimately, we got to look up. Just like David, first we start by saying, Hashem, save us from all of these lies, save us from all of these attacks. Then we can go and look into attack our enemy and say, why are you doing this? How could you do this? What's going on? Israel has the world sympathy for a minute. And we all know what's going to happen. We all know that it's not going to last long. We all know that they have to respond to something like this. And we just have to continue to daven. We got to do our part. And Amir Tashem, we should be zocha to see good things. Everyone should have a wonderful, wonderful night.